Welcome to Groundwire Community Radio News from coast to coast to coast. Groundwire is brought to you by the volunteers at Canada's community radio stations.
This episode of Groundwire was produced on unceded Mohawk territory in Montreal at CKUT Campus Community Radio.
We are your hosts, Jaquez and
Janaba.
In this episode,
it's more privilege towards the Canadian students.
It's a rally for BC Grizzly.
Privilege, as in my definition, would be
members of the multilingual community radio demonstrated.
But first, here are the headlines. Our first headline comes from CKUW in Winnipeg, Manitoba.
The Manitoba NDP convention was held in Winnipeg from March 17th to the 19th. Top on everyone's mind and dominating the conversation was a motion to change the way the provincial party's leader is chosen, ahead of the NDP provincial leadership vote in September. Though the pair of motions that would have steered the party towards a form of one-member, one-vote leadership selection process failed to garner the two-thirds majority to pass. However, and more impressively, the convention unanimously passed a new policy platform to keep fossil fuels in the ground and not build more pipelines. NDP federal leadership candidate and federal NDP MP from Manitoba, Nikki Ashton, commented on this bold move.
There was a very clear discussion that, or a clear message that, we need to be serious about climate change. And, our campaign is also put forward, we've indicated clear opposition to pipelines when Indigenous peoples are not consenting to them, when we're not meeting environmental regulations and when there's no social license. And that's, this is where we're at. And I'm proud that here in Manitoba, I'm incredibly inspired by the activists, particularly Indigenous activists, that have even taken this fight right to the Prime Minister at the famous town hall now here in Winnipeg at the U of W. And and it's clear to me that these are the folks that are that are sounding the alarm for all of us and saying, like, we need to get serious here, we need to get real. And so I am really proud of the NDP, provincial NDP's position on this.
Credit to Anna Houston from CKUW for the audio in that headline.
Our second headline comes from CKUT's Emmy Londre, who interviewed Stephen, an international student at Concordia University in Montreal. He shared his perspective on integration, Quebec society, and why Montreal's having been ranked the best student city in the world just doesn't add up.
Montreal has been ranked best city in the world for students. Its multiculturality, its integration, its student life, nightlife, and the environment allowed for a picture-perfect depiction of it. As an international student who knows a lot of international students, I'm well aware of the beautiful opportunities available in Montreal. However, I'm also aware of the hidden face of the city in terms of integration, something that is often less talked about when talking about Montreal. The whole idea of the well-being of the students is so big that we forget to address some concern. For example, Quebec is only a transit destination for many students that decided to settle elsewhere in Canada, in another province or in another country after the degree. I interviewed an international student to tell us more about it.
So when I got here, everything was different. In general, job finding is not as easy as it looks for international students, especially for the fact that I didn't get my undergrad degree here in Canada, so it's more difficult for me to get an internship. It's more privileged towards the Canadian students.
Okay, and in terms of the integration, because a lot of people are asking themselves why so many of those international students don't stay in Quebec and settle right after.
Most people that I've spoke to always tell me, like, when they graduate, they had to move to other cities because to integrate in Quebec, it's not really easy because most people speak just English for starts. And to be in Quebec, you need to speak both languages. I do speak both languages, but it doesn't seem to help so far. And so I think, yeah, it's a bit difficult to integrate the Quebec society.
As Steve just pointed out, many international students leave the province. Maybe we should work on finding the reason why and solving the problem.
That's it for the headlines. We'll be right back after this.
You're listening to Groundwire, community radio news available online at www.groundwirenews.ca.
You saw rain in the river is gonna rise. You saw rain in the river is gonna rise. my rain in the river is gonna rise. It's gonna rain so much it's gonna drown the sky. It's gonna rain so much it's gonna drown.
You just heard River's Gonna Rise by Laser from a demo recorded in December 2014. Now it's time for our feature stories. April Fool's Day also marked the beginning of British Columbia's trophy grizzly bear hunting season. Incredibly, despite more than 80% opposition, the provincial government still approves this regressive industry.
Between 100 and 150 people showed up at the lawns of British Columbia provincial government at the legislative building grounds in Victoria to hear speeches against the continued trophy hunt. Chris Cook from CFUV brings us this report.
So it's a sunny spring day, April 1st, down here in front of the legislature in Victoria. The beginnings of a gathering here. It's a rally for BC Grizzlies. The hunting season begins today as well. Well placed for the first. And this, of course, is to end the BC Trophy Hunt. Do you want to tell me who you are first?
Yeah, Sonia Firstenau. So I'm the candidate for Cowichan Valley.
Right.
And the deputy leader for the BC Greens and the advocate for environment.
Well, there's no grizzlies here on the island, of course, but you're out here for the rally for the BC Grizzlies. What's the issue?
The issue is trophy hunting. And so the issue is, should we be commodifying these incredible creatures and letting them be used for trophies? When they have an innate right to exist, and not, I mean, I was watching The Grizzly Truth last night, the film that's is just out on Vimeo, and there's this beautiful grizzly sow, and she's rolling around. It's a spring day like this. The sun's out, and she stands up, and she gets shot for a trophy, and that's wrong, and that's what this is about. This speaks to bigger questions about this government, right? How many of their donations come from the kinds of outfitters that want to see trophy hunting continue? How many donations have come from out of BC, from other countries that want to see this trophy hunt continue? And why are we putting our incredible creatures up for sale for foreign hunters to come in and shoot them and take their paws?
Well, good luck to your run in the upcoming election, and let's hope we can move a little bit more that way for the benefit of the grizzlies, if not for ourselves.
Yeah, thank you very much.
We're gathered here today because it's April 1st. It's the first day of the spring grizzly bear hunt in most areas of BC. And we're here at the legislature, which is where power is primarily concentrated and where decisions are made about the grizzly bear hunt that 91% of British Columbians are opposed to having. So on this day, the bears are coming out of their dens, some of them mums with tiny cubs, and if those mums are shot, then those cubs are left to perish. And over the past 16 years that this hunt has been legal in British Columbia through a lottery hunt, there have been 300 bears a year killed legally. That's 4,800 grizzly bears that have been killed. And when you think about 4,800 bears, those are all unique individuals in a very specific culture and a keystone species that we're losing. And who even knows what we're losing when those bears are killed for trophy, for sport? We have some speakers here today from across many different lines, cultural, political, ecological, economic, ethical, and they're going to share with you some of their feelings about why this grizzly hunt needs to come to an end, and this year, in particular, having an election come up on May 9th, it's time to vote to end this hunt. My name is Val Murray, and I represent Justice for BC Grizzlies. We've been actively working all year to raise public and political awareness about why this hunt needs to end.
I just want to point something out. I could be wrong. There's just been a couple of gentlemen over to our left who have been shaking their heads, and you can see them. They're quite obvious. They're in the cowboy hats there, and I guess this is still the Wild West to them. Maybe they're part of Christy Clark's entourage. I don't know. But, you know, you can wave to them, you can take their picture, and you can just say, like, because it's going to last a lot longer than the grizzly hunt is around here. So, you know, go ahead. You know, you're not really welcome here, but, you know, feel free to stay. So, anyway.
So there you have it. There's somewhere in the neighborhood of 120, 130 people here today. Most of them in support, with the exception of the pair that were outed by Jason Reichert. Two guys in cowboy hats with, you know, Western garb, disruptors of a sort. I'm not entirely sure what they hope to gain by that, but there you go. A nice day, a lot of support, and we'll see what happens next month.
In 2015, Maclean's magazine declared Winnipeg the most racist city in Canada.
In response, CKUW in Winnipeg took to the streets to ask Winnipeggers what they thought of their city's distinction.
We are joined by Lexi Batashnik, an activist and the host of Rock Colors right here at CKUW and the Black Space Winnipeg founder, who has organized many events in the Winnipeg and recently emceed Winnipeg's Women's March 2 weeks ago. So, what's your definition of privilege?
Whew, that's a loaded question. I think privilege, as in my definition, would be those who are accustomed to certain advantages provided by society, mm-hmm. who are not affected by any of the intersectional oppressions that also society places on other people.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. They just feel like they have that entitlement, right?
For sure.
So what is white privilege to you?
White privilege, well, that's tricky because white privilege can also be, I'll give you an example. My mom, I'm biracial. Mm-hmm. My mom's Jamaican. My dad's Russian Jewish. But to people, when they see me, they don't see me or recognize me as how I identify right away. I identify as a Black woman. But I benefit from light skin privilege because of politics of colorism, shadism. I'm of a lighter hue. And I can still benefit from white privilege, even though I'm a person of color, right?
Right.
So when white people, usually white people see me, they'll see me potentially as a woman of color, but I usually get an ethnic, and I put that in quotations, European, like Italian or Portuguese or whatever. But I think it's important to keep in mind that white people obviously benefit from white privilege, but since to like interracial relationships and the intersections of race, like a lot of people of color can still benefit from light-skinned privilege as well, which is a position that I'm in. So it's really important to keep in mind. But white privilege definitely gives you another advantage in this world.
The reason why I want to do this is because I feel like Winnipeg, we can get very uncomfortable about talking about privilege and just like race and gender and class and stuff like that. So it's better to bring it up with people on the street and just kind of like have their impulse reactions to it and everything.
The average white person on the street is going to be coming from a place where they've got a different sense of entitlement, you know, a different set of privileges ingrained in their brain as to what they should expect and so forth. And, you know, that would create, you know, the notion of white entitlement or...
You feel like you... What kind of privileges do you have as a woman or as a person?
Not enough. I'm sort of at the angry woman phase, you know, turn 50, and it all starts to pile up, and I feel like I don't have enough privileges as a woman.
One of the topics of the show is white privilege, and like just trying to understand, like, me as a white person walking around, I think I have a lot more people like assume good things about me versus like if you're not white, sometimes people might assume something like bad about you without even knowing you. Do you think that that's true?
Basically, yeah, because like the race, I think it's about the race. So
do you want to share that experience, or do you want to share the experience like what happened to you, or
Not right now?
No. Has it happened to you often? Being like...
Like, all the time.
Like, racially profiled or just prejudiced?
Racially profiled.
Walking on the street or just going to certain places?
Pretty much, yeah.
Do you feel that... Do you think it'll ever get better? Like, do you think you'll ever not be racially profiled, or is all the time will always happen to you?
I think it should get better.
And now, for our final feature. Last week in Vancouver, a conference entitled Why is a Canadian Professor Still in a French Jail? What Can We Do About It? Was organized by the Committee of Support for Hassan Diab, Canadian sociology professor, accused of a terrorist attack in Paris and still being held in a French jail. The Committee of Support of Hassan Diab is putting pressure upon the Canadian government through a parliamentary petition. This report was produced by CKUT's Eva and Marie.
In November 2014, the Canadian sociology professor Hassan Diab was unjustly extradited from Canada to France. He is confined to a prison cell for 22 hours a day, deprived of his freedom, and torn from his family in Canada. The Committee of Support of Hassan Diab is calling upon the Government of Canada to work towards the immediate granting of bail to Hassan Diab through a parliamentary petition. Roger Clark, ex-director of Amnesty International Canada and member of the Committee of Support of Hassan Diab, is telling us more about the situation of Hassan Diab.
Yeah, so the story actually goes back a very long way. It goes back to 1980, and in October of 1980, there was a bomb attack in Paris. It was on the Rue Copernic, and it was the synagogue there. It was a very bad attack, and four people died, and quite a number of people were injured. After that, there was nothing. The police conducted their investigations and so on, and so there was no further development in the case. And then in around 2007, a journalist, using information that is still fairly obscure, decided that the name of one of the possible suspects was Hassan Diab. And he looked and eventually found that there was a Hassan Diab living and working in Ottawa, Canada. So he came. He came to Canada, and he said to Hassan, "Do you know that the French police are looking for you?" Well, Hassan Diab knew nothing about this at all, and I'll explain in a moment why he is innocent of this. But never mind. The journalist who came wrote an article and later wrote a book. And on the basis of all of this secret intelligence, the French authorities in 2008 asked that Hassan Diab be arrested by the Canadian police and that he be extradited to France.
Roger Clark then added that it happened in 2008 and that he was extradited to France only in 2014, during which there was an extradition hearing and an appeal to the Canadian Supreme Court, which did not hear the case.
But nevertheless, the extradition judge decided that Hassan Diab should be sent to France.
Roger Clark explained us that there was a huge problem with that because during the extradition hearing, it appears that French authorities was working with evidences not well-founded, and according to Roger Clark, they are unreliable, unexpectable, and poor evidences, and the judge had to listen to the so-called evidences.
There was also secret intelligence evidence that even to this day, we don't know where that came from. There was handwriting evidence produced at the extradition hearing, but it was soon shown that the handwriting was not, in fact, that of Hassan Diab. It was somebody else. There were one or two other pieces of evidence that were produced, but which were later withdrawn by the French authorities. Unfortunately, the Canadian judge said that because there is an extradition agreement between France and Canada, he had no choice but to send Hassan Diab to France, even though the judge himself found that the evidence would not be sufficient to convict him if he were facing a fair trial. And I should also add that France does not extradite its own citizens to any other country. It's also very unusual that anybody is extradited from Canada when there are no specific charges laid, when the evidence is shaky, and when in fact it's not clear what the outcome will be. So for a number of reasons, the extradition was very problematic. And so it was that within 24 hours of the final decision to extradite, there he was removed from Canada and was put in prison in Paris.
You are still listening to Groundwire, community news broadcasting from coast to coast to coast and available online at www.groundwirenews.ca. Now it's time for our community radio report.
On Wednesday, March 29th, members of Radio Centreville demonstrated against the undemocratic commercialization of its airwaves. Many of the multilingual community radio station members have been protesting against the selling of airtime since the summer of 2016.
Radio Centreville has been broadcasting in Montreal since 1975 and provides programming to 8 different linguistic groups in the city.
On Wednesday, 29th of March, members of the multilingual community radio Radio Centreville demonstrated due to the selling of radio airtimes in a non-democratic way and against the will of the members. Financial cuts to community radio is not a one-off event, but a structural transformation enabled by current austerity measures that have continued to cut public funding and increase privatization. Javiera, member of this radio, is explaining us the context.
It's a long story. This starts like 1 year ago when we used to have a big amount of money that came from Centraide. This was a big part of our funding for Radio Centreville, which is a community radio. So that's the first thing to retain. If you don't know anything about Radio Centreville, the first thing to know is this is a community radio. So there is a group of members. The members decide what we're going to do with the radio, and there is a board like CKUT. What happened? Since this big amount of money was cut, we weren't having this. The radio wasn't receiving this amount of money. There was this big economic crisis at the radio, and one group of people, of members of the radio who were in the board at that point, decided to start selling airtime, which is a problem because the members didn't agree with that. The members in an assembly, they said, no, we don't want to sell airtime. We would like to look for another alternative ways of making the radio function, that like asking for other kind of money from governments. So even it's not, the radio members are not against selling airtime in itself. What is the problem is that the way board is doing. be what they're doing. So they are selling airtime like 1 hour. Someone can buy 1 hour of airtime in Radio Centreville on 2.3 FM. So you have 1 hour, and then you can sell it in that hour. You can sell advertisements. So you can have 10 or, I don't know, 20 people paying you, and you make money. You can actually make money from that. So we don't agree with that kind of selling of airtime at the radio, but especially we don't agree with the fact that it has been made against the will of the assembly of members. So the board has used a different strategies to go around the decision of the members. The members are not respected. The last General Assembly was completely a fraud with members who weren't actually members of the radio program.
Just heard Canada by The Posters from the album Bored in Canada.
That's it for this edition of Groundwire, produced on unceded Mohawk territory in Montreal at CKUT Campus Community Radio. Music this week was by Laser and The Posters.
Headlines this week were by Carly Forbes and Emmy Laundrie. We thank all our contributors, as well as Gretchen King
and Ome Sama Rahem Tula.
Tune in again to hear Groundwire on your local community radio station, or download at groundwirenews.ca.